Hi, this is Tom Brevoort, and you are listening to the Captain America Comic Fans Podcast.
Greetings, Cap fans, and welcome to episode 103 of the Captain America Comic Book Fans Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Verbanis, and as always, I'm joined by the best gosh darn co-host out there. That would be Mr. Bob Lucius. Hey, Bob. Rosebud.
Nice.
Yeah, what's that too?
That was the fat guy. What was his name? Citizen Kane.
Yes.
Orson Welles. Nice.
Yes. Very well done. Yeah, yeah. Citizen Kane. That was the number one movie of what year, Bob?
1941.
Yes, good guess. You know, it only took 104 episodes to catch on.
That Adderall I'm taking is really paying off.
It really is. Good job. Nicely done. Yeah. So why did I mention 1941? Well, because today we are covering Mythos, Captain America, which is a special one-shot story that is written by Paul Jenkins and illustrated by Paulo Rivera. And it is basically an origin story of Captain America, which, as all Captain America fans know, takes place in 1941. So, yeah, I was trying to come up with a unique greeting for you today, Bob. Top three movies of 1941. All right. So we had Citizen Kane, which you pointed out stars Orson Welles. Then number two, any guess?
1941. Gosh, I don't know, Rick. I'm not up on my movies from that era.
I wouldn't get you. Yeah. The Maltese Falcon.
Oh, classic, right?
Yeah, right. Because Humphrey we got Bogart. Yes, exactly, Humphrey Bogart. And then number three, animated
Fantasia.
Dumbo.
Oh, all right.
I'm not going to get into the rest because I've never heard of them.
Yeah. I'm sure they were great.
I'm sure they were. The but those top three, I mean, they stand the test of time, right? Citizen Kane, Maltese Falcon, Dumbo. Guess what, Bob?
What?
I never seen any of them.
What? Really?
I know. I was a communication major at college. And so some of the courses I took some film courses. I took some philosophy and film courses. Mm-hmm. And I saw some classic movies, never saw them, never got around to seeing them. I know they're classics. I have no excuse. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure I lost some points with some of our listeners because they're like, wow.
Yeah. Surely you've seen Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid.
I have. I like Steve Martin and Don't Call Me Shirley.
Well, that has a bit of the Maltese Falcon storyline, I think, woven. A lot of, it borrows from a lot of those, you know, those Humphrey Bogart films and those noir films of that era. So, great film.
Yes. Yeah. Dead Men Wear Plaid.
Yeah. Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Last night was the Emmys when we were recording this, right? So my wife was watching a little bit of that, and there was they had Mark Short and Steve Martin up there on stage. God, they look so close to what they've looked like for the last 40 years.
Yeah, they do. Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's amazing because I don't know how old Steve Martin is, but Martin Short is like 71.
Yeah,
still hilarious as ever.
Both of them, especially when they get together. I mean, I love, you know, Only Murders in the Building. Great show.
Haven't seen it.
Oh my God. It's my, Casey and I watched it. My wife, Casey and I, we watched that first season. We haven't watched the second season yet. We're really looking forward to being able to sit down, the two of us, and binge watch it. But that first season, just amazing. And then, you know, while it was, of course, available, I think it's on Hulu. We watched a number of interviews with Martin Short and Steve Martin, and just those guys, you put those guys in a room and in an interview, and it's nonstop entertainment.
Yeah, I bet. I would love to listen to those or watch those. I've certainly seen like some like specials where the two of them get up on stage and they, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes they're together. Sometimes they're doing like one man shows and then they come back and forth. Yeah, they're great together. Absolutely. I'll check that one of these days. I don't watch a lot of TV.
Yeah. Worth checking out.
All right. So we're talking about Mythos. Yeah. So I mentioned the writer, Paul Jenkins. He's a British fellow. He's a super nice guy. I actually, back when I had my store, my comic book store, he was a guest in my store. Yeah, because he lived in the Atlanta area. I don't know if he still does. But you know what? He, at that time, when he was a guest in my store to do the signing, he was at top of his game. You know, mm-hmm. he was like on Wizard's top 10 writers or whatever, you know? So it was great having him. And he's a gentleman, of course. Really, really nice guy. Yeah, if you're not familiar with Paul Jenkins' work. Back in, oh gosh, you know, he did Spider-Man for a long time. He did Peter Parker Spider-Man, like volume 2. He was on that for, I want to say, 3 years, in like starting from like 2000 to 2003. And then he did this Sentry miniseries. I don't know if you ever read that, Bob, but this was a brilliant story that he did that was about a character that he, you know, has the power of like a Superman, so to speak, mm-hmm. but he has a almost like a psychosis, like a split personality type of thing. So, you know, imagine Superman with some, you know, issues, mm-hmm. you know, mentally. And so here was the brilliant part of the story that he actually was one of the earliest superheroes. He worked with Fantastic Four, the early Avengers, but something was done to make him because he came too powerful, I think, mm-hmm. they made him forget about himself and like revert to his human personality because that was the only way to control him. Huh. And then to do that, they also made everybody forget about him. So Paul Jenkins is writing this story about this character uh-huh. that basically is a retcon and saying, oh yeah, he's been around for decades, but you know, in Marvel yeah. and here's some stories. And he wrote some stories.
That sounds brilliant.
It is. It, like I said, Paul's a really smart guy.
That'd be a great Marvel movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Well, and he ended up becoming, you know, they actually end up after this miniseries came out, they actually end up putting him into the Mighty Avengers when they launched that series. So that was really cool. He did, yeah, he did Witchblade, Darkness, for Image/Top Cal. And then he was on Spectacular Spider-Man for a couple of years. And then he did Wolverine, the, Origin.
Oh, yes.
Miniseries. I think, yeah. he, gosh, that was early 2000s. And then he did the Wolverine, the End story. So mm-hmm. I had him in the store right around that time. Then he went on to do these series of one-shots called Mythos. And there was a total of 6 of them.
Yes.
And the first one was the X-Men, which came out in early 2006. Then he did Hulk. Then Ghost Rider, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four. And then the final one mm-hmm. was Captain America in 2008. And these are all one-shot retelling of the origin, maybe slightly changing a few things, embellishing, fleshing out the story. His partner in all these Mythos stories was Paulo Rivera. And I got to say, the thing about Paulo, and a lot of people might know that name from, he's done nearly 200 covers. Right. Yeah. So yeah. he's done a lot of covers, but then he also did interior work. He had a nice run on Amazing Spider-Man, a nice run on Daredevil. But for these Mythos, he painted them. And it is they're absolutely stunning. So when we go through Captain America mythos today, we're really doing the listeners a disservice by talking through it. Highly, highly recommend, if you're a Captain America fan, pick this up, you know, and if you can't, go on to Marvel Unlimited and read it that way. There's also a collection out there of all the mythos together. You can get it that way, but the artwork is so stunning, Bob.
Yeah. In fact, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned the hardcover, the collection, because that was one of the first books I bought for my son, because I wanted him to get into comics. And there are such great retellings of the origin stories, but the art is just so stunning that I thought that would be something that would be really eye-catching for, you know, a young kid. And they're condensed origin stories, so that you don't have to read anything before or after. You just kind of get the sense of where these different superheroes came from. And so I picked that up specifically to introduce my kid to comics.
Yeah, that was smart on your end. You know, nothing like origin stories to kind of to get people kind of sucked in. So, yeah, and let me tell you, he's a painter. In these, right? So he pencils them and then he paints them. And I've done, you know, some research on some of the work, because he did this series of blogs when he was doing these mythos, and he was showing all the work that he put into these things, you know, as far as staging. You know, at some point I'll get into this, but he showed all the photos that he took of the hands, you know, like in this direction, that direction, up, down, bent, you know, pointing, doing this, just so that he could have a realistic look. Now, is it going to be realistic, like, say, an Alex Ross? No. But is it because it's stylistic almost, right? And I think he was the perfect person to pick for the series, because his artwork feels like from that time period, like that 60s.
It does, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then the coloring, you know, the muted colors, and it's just, and the amount of detail, like, you know, you'll see all this detail in the background. He's amazing.
Yeah, definitely one of my favorites. In this issue, this Mythos Captain America is one of my favorite Captain America comic books. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit about, you know, some things in the origin retelling that are a little bit askew from what most people expect. But to me, this is, you know, one of my favorites, if not my favorite origin retelling, simply because it's so masterfully illustrated.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It really is. And Bob, I can I spill the beans?
Do it.
Can I do it?
Do it. Just do it.
All right. Next episode, we're going to have Paulo Rivera on the show.
Yeah! You know how excited I am about that, Rick. I mean, I love this guy.
Yeah.
And when you said, hey, let's get him on the show, I was like, oh my gosh. All right. That sounds awesome. If you can get him, right?
Yeah.
So here we are.
He's going to be on the show. Yeah, we're very excited. So we'll keep that in mind as we're going through this, maybe to come up with some questions that we want to ask him. Mm-hmm. And also, you and I are owners of 4 pages of this 23, if you include the title page, book. We both recently, in the last few months, picked up, you know, some pages from this book, because they're really beautiful. And they're meaningful to us.
Right.
And we can talk about that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, Bob. So let's set the stage for what was going on during this time. Mm-hmm. Because this book came out, it had a cover date of August 2008, which means it actually, it hit the stands in June of 2008. I still had my comic book store, which seems like a lifetime ago. And also, you know, what was happening in the movie theaters at that time was, you want to take a guess?
I have no idea.
The very first Iron Man movie.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So that came out you know, Free Comic Book Day. I think it was May 2nd of 2008. And so this book came out roughly 6-7 weeks later. So obviously Iron Man's still doing great. So MCU is just kicking off at that point. That, if that kind of helps set the stage as well. Over in Captain America, Steve's dead.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Ed Brubaker's series, Volume 5,
has
been out for a little while now. And Steve Rogers has been assassinated. And now, you know, we have Bucky as Cap. So that's what's going on in the comics. That's what's going on in the movies. That's what's going on in my comic shop at that time. What were you doing back then in June of 2008?
June of 2008. What the heck? Where the heck was I? I was in Vietnam, Rick. I was living in Hanoi, working in Hanoi at the U.S. Embassy.
Yeah.
Doing embassy things, but just getting ready to come home. I came home in August of that year. I returned back to the States for a new assignment. But yeah, June 2008. So I didn't see this thing on the racks.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
So it wasn't reading material on the plane back to the States.
It sure wasn't. It sure, I wish it had been. But no, gosh, no.
So the rest of the creative team on here, we have the letterer is Joe Caramanga. We've heard that name many times. And the editor is Steve Wacker, Tom Brevoort. And this was the solicitation. He may be dead, but now you can find out how the man became the legend. Mythos revisits Steve Rogers' transformation from a weakling with a heart of steel to the Sentinel of Liberty. From the mind of Paul Jenkins and the stunning art of Paulo Rivera comes the origin of Captain America. It had a cover price of $3.99, which was, you know, a little high, but it was like a prestige format book, right? Yeah. It had like a little square bound to it, I seem to recall.
Yeah, I think so. And it was definitely a heavier cardstock cover, I think.
Yeah. And on the cover, you know, it had the Mythos logo across the top, kind of like a slant. And then underneath in small lettering, it says Captain America. And of course, a big old number one, because all the publishers know if you throw a number one on there, it's bound to sell a little bit better. And on the cover, you know, and by the way, the logo also is kind of done in a red, white, and blue theme. We have Captain America, but in his original uniform from 1941. So he has, you know, that space around his neck that's open, bare skin. So the mask is just kind of a half mask. And then he's got his heater shield, right? He's got his triangular original shield, which has you know, the three white stars at the top and then the stripes that go up and down vertically. And he's coming at you, Bob. He's coming at you with his shield up and his right hand cocked.
Yeah. And of course we see in reflected in the shield, who do we see, Rick? But Adolf himself.
A scared Adolf Hitler, if of that, yeah.
I think, you know, this is a difference of perspective, right? From Captain America comics number one.
Yep.
The perspective has shifted. You know, in Captain America comics number one on the cover, we see the side shot of Cap going in to punch Hitler. But here we see Hitler's perspective of that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Very well put. Yeah. I think that was very subtle, but but thanks for pointing that out, Bob. All right. So we get to the title page on the inside, and it has kind of a description at the top, but on the side is a bunch of panels from Captain America comics from that time period, 1941, maybe 1942, but definitely the origin story, right? So they have that all listed there. And then it reads, 1941, the world at war. And in a full security laboratory, frail Steve Rogers became Captain America, the American super soldier. For four thrilling years, he struck back at the Axis treacherous attack until a freak stroke of fate threw him into suspended animation to awaken in the present day, a man out of his time. Since that day, Captain America has sought his destiny in this brave new world.
Nicely done.
And it has a Captain America logo, which is very reminiscent of the original logo from 1941. And then there's a nice little painting of some headshots by Paolo. And you've got a Steve Rogers, but he's a transformed Steve Rogers. You know, not the weakling, but he's in his private uniform, U.S. Army uniform. You have Captain America in his uniform. Bucky, again, two versions, one in his, Bucky uniform, one in his mascot, Army mascot uniform. And then in the background, you've got a Red Skull, and you've got a Hitler, and you've got a syringe with a little serum.
Yeah. That's a really neat, it's small. It's relatively small, you know, compared to the mm-hmm. size of the page, but that right there in and itself is just an amazing piece of work.
Yeah. I've seen it for sale. I want to say, and I think it was up for auction maybe about a year ago. And I didn't bid on it because, I wasn't really sure where it was from. I didn't know. Yeah. So I regret that now.
Yeah.
I have regrets. and it says, based on Captain America Comics number 1, March 1941 by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. And then, of course, credits them for creating Captain America. And Bob, and listeners, I'm just going to tell you right now, I'm going to do my best. It is a very solemn story. There are parts I might get choked up. Just going to warn you now. I'm going to try to get it out of my system. And I'm gonna do my best.
All right, here we go. Folks, if you're listening to this, make sure you're around somebody that can offer a hug.
All right, so this opening page is split up into like four quarters vertically, four stacked images stacked on top of each other. And they're all basically kind of from the same perspective, but different time periods, right? So I think this top one is modern time. There's a tall blonde gentleman standing there with a raincoat on and a hat. Safe to say it's probably Steve Rogers.
I think that's a fair bet.
And he's and it looks like he's in downtown New York area. There's a bustling street, people going by, there's cars, taxi, people with umbrellas. He's underneath an overhang and looking at the VFW. And for Bob, for those who don't know, what does VFW stand for and what is it?
Well, it's the Veterans of Foreign Wars. So it's one of a handful of, veterans organizations. So there's VFW, Disabled Vets of America, the American Legion. And so they're support organizations. They advocate for vets and they all have different requirements for joining. But the VFW is Veterans of Foreign Wars. So you must have served in a foreign war to be a member. So more than just simply being a vet.
Gotcha. And what do they do for the veterans there?
Well, a lot of times it's just camaraderie. So the posts, so they have posts like VFW posts. You'll find them in almost every city. It's there's a bar, right? And so it's a place for folks to go and hang out with their fellows from different wars and just find camaraderie. But they also provide, sometimes they provide scholarships for kids. They help provide medical grants for folks who need medical care, those sorts of things. So, it's like an all-around service organization of vets looking out for vets and their families.
Very nice. And I bring that up because I think it's important to the story.
Yeah, it sure is. Right. Yeah.
So on the next panel, it is from the same perspective, but it looks like we're going back in time. Maybe it's the '70s, based on the hairstyles, the clothing, and the cars driving by. And you could see some changes to some of the exteriors. The next panel, it goes to, looks like maybe the '50s, right? With the styles that we were talking about before. And then the last panel is looks like 1941. And during this time, there is a little movie theater there, right? So it was there. Three of the four panels, I think, sometimes movie theaters kind of go out of business. And then the last one has a movie, Errol Flynn, The Seahawk. And before there was a place there for VFW, there was a place where you could go and register to be in the Army. And so the very last one, as I said, was 1941. And we see a young, teenage Steve Rogers standing there, very skinny, scrawny, right? And he's got, a white dress shirt on with the sleeves rolled up and some dress slacks. And he's got his hands on his back, lower back, like both of them. So his elbows are cocked out, and he's kind of standing there like thinking. Right.
Yeah. It's that classic thinking pose, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're going to be there for a while, and you've given your braced your back with support while you're pondering.
A long time ago, though it seems like only yesterday, I was young and stupid. My father, Joseph Rogers, served in the 1st Battalion, 26th Infantry during the Great War. He took a bullet during the push for the Sowetians. One of the original Blue Spaders. I wanted nothing more than to enlist in his regiment. So we cut to the next page, and we see the front of that Steve Rogers, who has got his arms cocked behind, and he's staring at the Army recruitment. And then we cut to, and this is all him deliberating, right? And mm-hmm. And this is Steve remembering himself deliberating in the same spot all these years, decades later. And we cut to memories of his mom and his dad. I don't remember much about him. He laughed a lot, I seem to recall, and he smelled of applesauce. He died of influenza in 1926 at the age of 33. And so if he died in 1926, then, Steve must have been just, a young child.
Right. Yeah.
A few years later, the Depression hit. I remember one day our landlord put all of our possessions onto the street. Some members of the local Communist Party chapter came by and helped my mother bring all of her furniture back inside. In those days, landlords didn't have the resources to evict people twice. It made me realize something. That compassion can come from anywhere and anyone, even from communists. And there's a young Steve sitting on the steps as these guys are carrying beds and chests and furniture, back into the apartment as his mother standing there watching. And beautifully illustrated the detail. And then we I love how the panel moves, right? There's a flow here, right? He's showing the same outdoor portion of the apartment from the street and the steps, but time moves on. Different things happen in the panels, and yet it's the whole thing stays still. It's a beautifully well executed way to illustrate the passage of time in the same area.
Mm-hmm. That well said. That's you described it exactly as I'm seeing it here in front of me.
And so then we have a young Steve cowering up against the wall, sitting down on the ground, using a book to shield his face, And then there's this bully over top of him with a slingshot. And he's like 2 feet away from him. That's got to hurt.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And he's got, how would you describe that kid's face?
He's definitely got a very aggressive face. And yeah.
Yeah. But he looks to be
enjoying himself.
Kind of like a dummy, right? Doesn't he look like a dumb bully?
A thick head, dumb bully head. Yeah, right. That's what my son would call him. Bad guy bully head. Yeah,
exactly. And he, and Steve goes on to say, but very rarely from Dougie Huggins, who lived in the basement apartment two doors down. He blacked my eye every day and twice on Fridays. I was always too small and skinny to fight back.
You know, Rick, this is an example, I think, of the level of detail. I mean, I don't know if you're seeing it, what I'm seeing, but if you look at Steve's book that he's using to shield his face, it looks like Dougie has taken several shots at that book already with the slingshot.
Yeah, there's a bunch of indentations on the hardcover book. I got sick a lot, and it often seemed like there was no running away from that place except in the pages of a fantasy novel. And then in the next panel, we see the inside, and there's his mom, very tall, slender, blonde woman with her hair pulled back, wearing an apron and a dress. And she's over in a sink, looks like maybe washing clothes, you know, hand washing clothes. While Steve is sitting at the very modest dining room table, drawing a young Steve. Mama had no such escape. She worked two jobs just to make ends meet. We'd sit indoors as she scrubbed, listening to the radio. I'd draw pictures for her just to make her smile. But she never did smile. She just faded away. And that's the last panel on this page where she's laying in bed, and we don't see her. We just see the covers and her two hands, but we do see what's the focus of this panel is Steve as he's sitting on the other side, and we see his body. You see the upper half of his body when he's sitting in a chair, and he's holding a book, a sketchbook. And he's got a pencil in his right hand as he's drawing for his mom. When you get better, I'm going to take you out of the country, Mama. You'd like that. I drew this for you. Eat your stew, Stevie. It's good food. I don't want it, Mama. You be strong now. Eat your food. I don't like it. It has carrots in it. Carrots are good for the memory. I want you to pay attention and learn. You keep studying and drawing like you do, and you'll be someone. Why would I want to remember this? I'd just as soon forget. Oh, Stevie, and she grabs his hand. I want you to remember. Always be proud of who you are and where you came from. Never forget the people who helped you get to where you're going. Never forget. That was the last thing she said to me before she died. And what an absolutely beautiful panel.
Stunning.
So that chair that he was sitting in, he's now sprawled, leaning with his head on his mom's hands, the one that she grasped his hand. It was just beautifully done. He dropped the book. He dropped the pencil when he realized his mom had passed. The next page, we cut to an older Steve. He's a, you know, late teens at this point, and he's working. and he's moving some canisters around. He's got an apron on. I was alone, wishing for all the world that I could be anyplace else. But if wishes were nickels in those days, we'd all have been millionaires. After she was gone, I worked a delivery truck for a while. Here I was, a 95-pound teenager, unloading trucks full of tomato paste that weighed more than I did. And then the next panel, we start to see newsreels, and they're done in black and white. So you can tell that, you know, this is something that Steve's seeing in the movie theater. And it's horrible images of German troops invading various countries in Europe. Despite the hardship, I felt I had no reason to complain. There were others worse off than I. Across the sea in Europe, a storm gathered. Nazi Germany invaded Poland. Britain and France then declared war on them. And we see a very concerned and even maybe even scared Steve watching the reels. And then we see an image of Hitler looking down on his thousands of troops that are all standing at attention. We watched in horror as Hitler's war machine ground countries into dust. The nightmare of his Third Reich became a reality. An entire nation fell into madness. Italy followed suit. Imperial Japan began to stir. We knew war would eventually come to us if we didn't get to it. Dougie Huggins and I went together to enlist. Me, to join my father's regiment. He, because he was bored. It's hard to believe that he's actually friends with his bully.
Yeah, you know, they're older now in this panel, right? So yeah. You know, they're several years on. So, you know, friends, maybe not friends, right? But certainly neighbors and acquaintances. And, you know, like many acquaintances, sometimes you're more friendly than at other times. Sometimes you work together. Sometimes maybe you work at odds. And I think maybe that's the relationship at this point.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. So now we cut to this next panel and we're back to seeing Steve standing there with his hands cocked behind him, staring at the Army registration office. And I want to ask Paolo about this because I think if I had to guess, Paolo picked Steve standing in such a distinct way. So that way we could bring, we would know that that was the moment that current Steve was thinking about when he was standing in that place, looking at that younger Steve and that decision. And now after telling a little bit of what brought them to that period of time, we're now back to that period of time. And you can tell because Steve's standing in a very distinctive way.
Yeah, I agree with you. Number one, I think you have identified something that certainly I don't think I've ever really honed in on that before, noticed that before, but I think that's absolutely right. We're back at that moment when he's across the street from where the Army recruiting station is, and we see it from a different perspective now. But I also want to point out this, that way of standing, I don't know if you've noticed this, but in a lot of old newsreels, you see people standing like that. You don't normally see people standing like that. That's not a gesture that you see anymore, but it was more common. If you look at a lot of the black and white newsreels, folks stood like that when they were hanging out.
Maybe they all had bad lower backs.
Maybe. I don't know what it was, but body gestures, body positions, they change in different eras. That just occurred to me that I've seen in black and white films and black and white newsreels, men standing like that.
Remember this moment, my mother would have said. Never forget the events that shape you. She would have been wrong. I was classified 4F and rejected for military service. So we cut to the next page and we see a very, very scrawny Steve getting that rejection. And then behind him is Dougie Huggins with that stupid looking face. Like, I don't think Paolo could have picked a better face for this obnoxious bully, right? This Neanderthal, you know,
fathead. Yeah.
You know, I don't like bullies, Bob. You know that about me?
Yeah, I know.
I don't like bullies. And so Steve's pleading with the guy. He says, "But you got to let me in. I can hold my own. I swear. I'm pretty strong for my size." "I'm sorry, son. You're too frail for military service." "There must be some way I can prove myself. I could take a test." And this is at a different place, right? And a different person is telling him, "Son, you have fallen arches and asthma. Applicants must be over 100 pounds to enlist. No exceptions. I feel bad for you, but you got to go home." And this next panel, wow, what a stunning panel. There's things going on here. So here in the back alley, we see Steve Rogers, a dejected, a demoralized Steve Rogers. And he's sitting on a, I don't know, like a little step, you know, outside of a door, and a cement step in this alley. And he's leaning over, he's hunched over. He's got his arms on his knees and his head, you know, just resting on his wrist. And he's looking down. It could very well have been crying. But he's obviously demoralized. And then the other thing going on in this panel is we see a officer, a military officer, older, who is walking in the alley toward him. But no words, no panel, nothing needs to be said in that panel. The illustration does it all. And then Steve looks up at the, and he sees, you know, the shoes, right? He's staring at the shoes of this military officer who comes, stands next to him. "I saw what happened in there. Must have been a tough pill to swallow, son. I'm sorry." And then I love this, Bob. As he goes to sit next to him, Paolo draws, you can see the general's older. Right. He's not as nimble.
Right.
Right. Because he's got his one hand down on the step, and then he's slowly letting himself down. He's got the other resting on his knee. He's got looks like maybe a bum leg that's straight, know, as he's sitting down next to him. Absolutely love that.
Yeah. You can read the body language right in Paolo's painting.
Yeah. "The 26th was my father's regiment, sir. Come this time next year, we're going to be at war with the Nazis. I just wanted to enlist, do some good." "I know you did. That's why it's a shame. America will need more like you in the coming months and years." "I love my country, sir, and I'd just as soon not see German as our first language. But if a guy like me can't make it as a blue spader, what good am I to anyone?" And then we see the general kind of look up, and he has kind of, you know, he's still got his hat on and covering the kind of like the bridge of his eyes. And he gives him a little look, and he says, "What if I could arrange something?" Now that's page 5 of this story, right? Mm-hmm. This I own page 5. Mm-hmm. I love this page. I was just, I got this from a fellow collector, and I got pages 5, 7, and 8. So I own 3 of the next, you know, these next 4 pages that we're covering.
Right.
And absolutely love them.
And actually, Rick, this is the first time I've noticed that on the general's lapels are miniature heater shields.
Yeah, you know, I didn't notice that. That's a good pickup by you.
Yeah. And I'm trying to, this is an army uniform from World War II. I can't quite remember what normally goes there, if they're the round army, you know, brass army, you know, eagles, the army logo, or if that is the unit insignia that goes there. I can't recall. But I've never noticed that before, but they are miniature of Cap's original heater shield.
That's a good pickup by you. So next page, and we see Steve, who's wearing a suit, and he's looking out the window of an airplane as they're flying. The general's name was Phillips, and he arranged something. I joined the army, enlisting in the 1st Battalion, 26th Infantry at the rank of private. I was promoted to the rank of captain while in midair. No one explained to me why. 7 hours after I joined up, we landed in Washington. I was told I had volunteered for a secret mission, a matter of national security that could not be discussed until we arrived at our destination. I love that. I was told I had volunteered.
Yeah.
Well, how often did it happen to you, Bob?
Every day. Yeah, voluntold.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lucius, you're volunteering to do this.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, it makes the decision making easier.
Mm. Oh, that's right. I forget. You were Private Luscious.
Yeah, very briefly.
I was asked, among a thousand other things, if I had taken the time to prepare a will. I had a few thousand questions of my own. And they are, the car is parked in front of a shop. What's on the window, Bob?
It says antiques and curios.
Yeah. And after someone knocks, there's a little old lady. You know, she's got the shades, you know, the little vertical or sorry, horizontal shades, right? And she's pushing them down and she's peering through. Who is it at this time of night? We're closed. We have an interested customer with us. We are told you have a potion for sale. And then she opens up the door, but she no longer has that old lady mask on. It's actually a very attractive woman.
Indeed.
Come inside quickly. Where are we going? Please stay silent and hurry. We can't stay in the storefront for too long. And then the next panel, it's a beautiful panel. It's a big panel of the whole you know, laboratory, if you will. And if you saw Captain America First Avenger, the movie that came out a couple years later, it really looks like they based it on this.
It does. I was just noticing that myself. So many features are reminiscent of the design work for the First Avenger.
Yeah. You know, we'll have to ask Paolo about that, right? Is, mm-hmm. You know, was, I mean, the movie came out in 2010. This came out in 2008. I'm sure they were filming the movie back in 2008. Like, what came first? You know, was there a little bit of this design? Was like, did he, you know, was there any type of knowledge on his part? Or
did he go out to lunch with, was it Ryan Mendering? Is that the guy who did the art? The concept art.
I don't know. I'm impressed that you know that name.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's well known. He's done a lot of illustrations for Cap. He does a lot of the concept art for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I wonder if there was any cross pollination there.
I don't know. But what a beautiful panel, right? This is. I mean, you see Dr. Erskine there. You see a whole bunch of his assistants. You see the chair that Steve's going to sit in that has the wooden chair with straps and the IVs next to it and the cart. But then you see to the left, you see, like, you know, that the, you know, like in the movie, they have the Vita rings, right?
Right.
You know, and there was like the panel, you know, that they were looking at. This is really reminiscent of that. You know, the gaskets, you have the observation booth, right? That the mm-hmm. all the big wigs are sitting in to watch this. There's even some, like, you know, some statues and some busts, you know, like some Greek statues, it looks like, you know, maybe they were like, here's what the perfect male figure is supposed to look like, you know, right. And, yeah. you know, trying to transform into that. A lot of detail here. It's, you know, even you go back in on the top right corner, you know, there's stairs that lead to an overhang, and then in the lights and the exhaust that comes out, and there's even some, you know, a little bit, you could see like the dust in the you know, underneath the
right.
lights.
Yeah. There's dust in the air to diffuse the light.
Now, Bob, I'm pretty sure this page is still available for sale on Palo's website. If somebody wants to get an origin Captain America beautifully painted page, I'm pretty sure this one's still available. Mm. Then we cut to the next page, and we see a very young, frail, skinny teenage Steve Rogers taking off his shirt. So he's got he's bare chested, and he's handing his shirt to an assistant. There is Dr. Erskine. Dr. Erskine is standing on the other side of the chair. He's got his hands on the back of the chair, and he's kind of smiling, I would say. And then we have the general. Right. General Phillips standing there. And this is the first time we were seeing him without the hat. They called it Operation Rebirth, the brainchild of a brilliant geneticist named Erskine. I was to be subjected to an experimental drug that would literally replace and redesign my entire cellular landscape. I would be the first of many so-called super soldiers that would first quell enemy agents in the United States and perhaps move on to the European theater of war and assist the Allied forces there. Or that was the plan. How do you feel, son? Nervous, sir, like a pincushion. Bravery and nerves go hand in hand, son. You'll be fine. Just think of what we're about to accomplish. Bend forward, please, Captain Rogers. And they're strapping him into the chair. Meanwhile, Dr. Erskine is just standing there with his arms, you know, hands folded behind his back, and he's addressing the people who are in the, you know, watching this. And we start to catch what he's saying. Where a direct electrical current will pass through the subject's body, stimulating the nerve endings and thereby catalyzing the cellular modifications. The dangers of this experiment cannot be overstated, Captain Rogers. Please state for the record that you entered this program of your own free will and that you have consented to the administration of the serum. And we see Steve, who's strapped into the chair, but they left a little room on the straps. I like that. I find that interesting, right? Because he's supposed to grow.
Right.
So they left some space to grow. And he just leans forward with this determined look on his face and a little fear and a little apprehension. I have, sir. Yes. And he injects him in the back of the neck. And you see Steve grimace. There is a saying we are fond of here, Captain. What doesn't kill you will make you stronger. And what doesn't make you stronger, well, we're all praying for the former. And then we cut off panel so we don't see the transformation, but we cut to a close-up of the syringe and an empty serum bottle. Now, how do you feel? It's pretty weird, sir. Note the incredible surge of cellular reconstruction, muscle tissue formating at an immeasurable rate. The subject's retinas will also be rebuilt by millions of replacement cells. And so we see his body growing, but we don't see his face. We just see him leaning forward in the chair. We see his chest. We see his arms. And he's grimacing and he's grunting. And then the next panel, we see the transformed Steve Rogers. And he sits up and he's huge. It feels wonderful, Dr. Erskine. Invigorating. Note changes to the subject's entire subcutaneous environment, liver, kidneys, lymphatic system. His lungs are now at the capacity to absorb over 98% of the oxygen passing across the alveoli. The basic structure of the so-called super soldier begins to emerge. And then right underneath that panel, we see a reflection from the window of the observation room, Steve Rogers, but we see a word balloon from the window for the Reich. And we see a very, surprised Dr. Erskine getting shot. But then Steve breaks away from his chair. The straps and broken wood still tied to his forearms. And he yells, "No!" And we cut to the next page. And we see Dr. Phillips, "It's a spy! After him!" And he jumps up there and he grabs the spy and he pulls him from the broken window and he throws him into a piece of equipment, which he then accidentally touches the sparks where their bullets were, and he electrocutes himself. And then we see a Dr. Erskine laying in blood and his assistants around him, sad. And Steve standing there with his shirt off and his shoes off, but he has his pants on and he's talking to the general. In a moment, the experiment was over. It could never be recreated. I was its only measurable result. The serum had worked. That much was obvious from the change I had undertaken. I was put through the most rigorous training imaginable in order to answer the most obvious question. What had I become? And how would you describe what's going on in the background, Bob?
He's doing calisthenics. He's doing gymnastics. He's got one of those scenes where he's running on a treadmill with electrodes all over his body and forehead, measuring his cardio output. It shows him in a white gi with a black belt, practicing, I don't know, judo or karate or something. So it shows him on the left observing some briefings in a briefing room. So, I mean, it's like a collage of the different aspects of his training and preparation for becoming a super soldier.
And then we cut to him in his Captain America uniform, and he is in a battle scene as he's being shot at by the military, and he's jumping over a creek, which almost looks like he's in, downtown London area.
Yeah, it could be Amsterdam or something for sure, Belgium.
An answer began to present itself, though not in the way we most expected. I was immensely fast, immensely strong. My newly augmented brain began to soak in knowledge. I had learned and implemented military tactics derived from thousands of years of warfare. At first glance, I was the super soldier the military so desperately sought. But I had become more than a soldier. I had become a symbol of America's move away from isolationism. And then I know this is one of your favorite panels, Bob. You want to describe what's going on here?
Yeah. So he's clearly at a school assembly. One of those old-fashioned looking auditoriums that doubles as a cafeteria, right? The stage is wood, and he's standing up there, and you see in the audience, you see children all holding their hands over their heart. You see adults and teachers up against the windows, the principal front and center, and Steve in his Captain America garb, the original Captain America garb that you described on the cover, is standing on stage with several children, perhaps a dozen or so. And he's standing there with his hand over his heart, and they're all saying the Sentinel of Liberty oath.
I solemnly pledge to uphold the principles of the Sentinels of Liberty and assist Captain America in his war against spies in the USA. I have become an icon. And so, with the weight of a nation's altruistic rebirth hanging over my head, they shipped me off to basic training at Camp Lehigh in Virginia. Given that my identity should remain secret at all costs, I was assigned driver's duty for one of the chaplains. I've often wondered what the Padre would have made of it if he had known his bodyguard was none other than Captain America. And they're showing, you know, some scenes from what that's going on. Then they cut to him in the, looks like the cafeteria doing his little KP duty.
He's doing KP, he's peeling potatoes.
But who's that? It's the first time we're seeing is a young Buchanan Barnes.
Yep.
And he's looking at a magazine, Boy's Own, and on the cover is a Captain America. Now, I would want to point out, Captain America had his triangular shield up until that point. Now he's got his circular shield, and it is properly done the way it was back in those comics.
That's right.
Right? There's an addition. You know, it's basically got four rings instead of three, and it goes blue, white, red, white, and then you get to that inner blue circle with the white star.
Yeah.
I just wish they'd let a kid like me join up. You're too young, Bucky. Help me peel these. You think we'll ever meet Captain America? I'll arrange it if you help me peel these. And then we cut to Cap doing push-ups and being yelled at by his sergeant. Worthless, useless, brainless, gutless. And then we cut to this next panel. Well, this is a really cool panel, Bob.
Rick, I got to share with you and perhaps our Facebook members as well, that I have a picture from a magazine that looks almost exactly like this sequence of panels, where I am doing push-ups in the mud with my drill sergeant standing over me. and I can assure you he was saying pretty much the same dialogue.
How do you have pictures of that?
It was in a magazine. What the hell was it? Not Leatherneck, not Marine Corps Gazette. It was in Naval Proceedings magazine. Just happened to be doing a story about boot camp. I mean, OCS, Officer Candidate School, and they had a photographer that was out taking pictures when I was going through OCS. And I happened to be a squad leader for the day, and I was being summarily punished for the failure of my Marines at that time. It was immortalized in an issue.
And what year?
Oh, gosh, that was 1988, I think.
Oh, okay, that explains. I had let my subscription run out before then.
Well, you can get back issues. They're in the dollar bins.
All right. This next panel, really cool panel, might be a favorite panel vote. I'm not sure. But it's Captain America in his new uniform. So he no longer has that half mask. He has a full mask. And like I said, he has that red shield with the four rings and the blue outer ring. And it's looking up at him as he's coming down via parachute in a bloody red sky, and then seeing explosions going off all around him. While I acted the part of the home front, I also acted the part with the American soon-to-be allies in Europe. As Captain America, I operated behind enemy lines, taking the fight directly back to the Nazis. At the same time, I had become what I always wanted, a true blue spader, one of the boys of the 26. Part of me yearned for that normalcy of the barracks, the camaraderie. And look who's there, Bob. Can't mistake that face.
The kid. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got Dougie. But the truth could never be known. And there's Cap sneaking out at night. Unless by accident. And there he is in his barrack, you know, and in this tent. And there's Bucky coming in on him as he's changing from his Captain America uniform. Steve, what in Bucky? How much did you see? Nothing. I just saw the costume. I told you never to come in on me like that. What are you doing here? I came to tell you something. The Japanese have attacked us at Pearl Harbor. It's all over the news. We're at war. And we cut to a scene of the Japanese dive bombers firing on the various battleships in Pearl Harbor in black and white. Then things are going to change. You're going to have to change too. You're Captain America all along. It was you. I can't believe it. You can never tell a soul, Bucky. Everything that I am depends on it. Understand? What are you going to do to me? It's not what I'm going to do, son. From now on, it's what we're going to do. Sometime in late 1942, the 26th Infantry came ashore in Tunisia, the first ever amphibious military assault conducted by the United States in North Africa. As Captain America, I had previously scouted the coastline under cover of darkness. But I had to keep up appearances. While the boys fought for their lives through the Kasserine Pass, I would drive the Padre around, miles behind the front lines. I'd itch for the chance to bust Nazi heads, but I couldn't run the risk of exposing my identity. What a beautiful panel, right, of the infantry storming the beach. Just so much detail here. I wish I highly encourage everybody to pick this up and look at it. I made up for it every chance I got. One of Hitler's henchmen was a vile creature named the Red Skull, a grotesque modified human whom Bucky and I scrapped with on more than one occasion. And what's going on in this scene, Bob?
Well, it looks like, one of those, and a lot of, you didn't mention it earlier, but that image of Cap parachuting where you're looking up, it looks almost like a cover of not the Captain America series, but the USA comics, right?
Right? Good. Yeah, good point.
A Schomburg cover, right? Mm-hmm. And this, you see Bucky tied up, hanging from a big hook. Over a looks, they're in a, obviously they're in an, a steel smelting factory, and there is a big a cauldron of molten iron, and he's hanging above that as Cap is slugging it out with the Red Skull. So it's very reminiscent of a lot of those original bondage covers from Captain America comics.
Yeah, and you know, Bucky has a little smile on his face too, just like he, you know, we did back then. He doesn't feel like, even though he's in a perilous position, right? He's hanging, he's chained, he's smiling,
right?
Because, you know, Cap here to save the day.
He's got confidence.
Yeah. And Cap's punching out a Red Skull. And what a great image of the Red Skull's face, right? Like it's getting like pummeled and is almost like buck teeth. And he obviously looks kind of humiliated and defeated, which is the best way to look at a Red Skull.
That's it. Yeah.
It struck me as ironic that his ghastly appearance was very much in keeping with his status as a hero of the Third Reich. I'd like to think I presented a more civilized image as a hero of democracy and freedom. And there's a poster of Cap in a very much a Uncle Sam pose, pointing, saying, "Your country needs you. Enlist now." While I toiled in heroic anonymity, the boys of the 26 moved across the Mediterranean into Sicily. Some days I fought alongside them. They were the best of times and the worst of times. In battle, one learns a certain kind of calm as an alternative to the fear that dominates every moment. I could never find that elusive calm. It hurt too much to watch my brothers ripped apart by fire from a 10-millimeter cannon or shrapnel. These boys didn't have the benefit of super soldier serum to help them dodge a bullet. As we see in a couple of panels here, Cap, fighting alongside the 26 and then standing with a medic over one of his fallen comrades.
And again, the detail, right? Because he's got his shield, in this case, on his right arm, and he's holding it above his wounded comrade. But at the same time, in that same hand, he's holding an IV bottle, giving emergency fluids to that downed soldier.
Yeah. And then we see him hunched in the middle of the day over a trench. And he's looking down into the trench with his elbows on his knees and his shield hung on his back. In France, I saw with my own eyes evidence of Hitler's so-called final solution. Jews and their accused sympathizers lined against a half-mile trench and executed with a single shot to the base of the skull. More than a few were buried alive. In Russia, I fought knee-deep in rivers of icy blood on the frozen Eastern Front, with communists as my brothers and allies. And in this panel, we see him wearing a white coat with a hood over top of himself, leading a band of Russian soldiers who are dressed the same way, that are in chest-high icy waters, but he has his shield up protecting them as they're going through the woods. And then we cut to the next page, and it's a really nice half splash of Cap and Bucky there on Normandy Beach, welcoming the sight of all the fellow soldiers that are coming onto the beach. Bucky and I stood one brisk summer afternoon on a Normandy beach and took in the most glorious sight we ever did see, a flood of troops and equipment moving up like a giant living stream. These were our own boys, come to right grave injustice far from home. I never felt so proud to be an American as I did at that moment. After the 26 went into Aachen, the first German city to be taken of the entire war, I went to visit the troops. I personally awarded 3 bronze stars for valor. One of them went to Private First Class Douglas Higgins of New York City. The war drew to a close. Hitler was on the run. We were going to win. But fate had one last twist in store for Bucky and me. And we cut to the infamous drone plane.
Yeah.
And Bucky is trying to defuse the bomb. And Steve is on the wing, yelling at him. And then there's an explosion. There's a big explosion, Bob. Everyone has a number. It comes up only once. Mine came up over the icy waters of the North Atlantic. Bucky! And what a beautiful image of the sky and the Arctic Ocean. And then we see Steve floating with his face up. In that frozen water, my heart began to slow. Thanks to my unique body chemistry, I didn't die. Still, I fell into a dream. I dreamt I was a soldier. I dreamt of Sarah, my mother, my father, Joe. I imagined them dreaming of me. I dreamt of home. And in those images, we see very different lighting, right? Uh-huh. This is where everything else was dark. This is light, almost as if maybe they're in heaven. And we see his father and his mother next to each other, holding up little baby clothes as she's pregnant. We see him and his mom, a very healthy looking mom, sitting at the dining room table, listening to the radio.
Yeah, and she's not working. She's knitting.
Yeah.
Right? Not scrubbing clothes in the sink like before.
Mama and me, listening to the Bronx Bombers. She could hear Joe Dugan crack a double just by the sound of the bat. I dreamt of the boys of C Company, my brothers. I dreamt of America. And while I slept, America also dreamed. And then we cut to the next page, and it's a big double page splash. And it's an image of, from his point of view, waking up and seeing the Avenger standing over him with an up close picture of the Wasp. And then we have Iron Man, Thor, and Giant Man. When I awoke, the dream was real. I had been asleep for decades. The world had changed. Adolf Hitler and his mistress, Eva Braun, had committed suicide in a bunker in Berlin. America's enemies were communists. We had fought in Vietnam and Korea. I had missed the advent of rock music, computers, the moon landings. I asked myself an old question. What had I become? And in the image, we see Steve in the Avengers mansion at a console looking at all the different monitors and just taking it all in as Jarvis is standing there behind him with a glass of milk ready to be served. And then a beautiful large image of the Avengers in battle. So we have Hulk, Iron Man, Black Panther, Scarlet Witch, Thor. In the background, we also have Hercules. And we also have the Black Knight. There's Hawkeye. And they're battling, you know, villains. And you see Cap there, and he's smiling. The answers were best left to others now. I returned to my duties alongside the mighty Avengers to reprise my role as Captain America, Sentinel of Liberty. I was a symbol of heroism, all that was right with the United States of America. But I never felt like a hero. Not really. And then the next page, we cut to back to looking at Normandy. And the fellows of the 26. The real heroes were the boys I once knew who feared for their lives, yet fought for freedom anyway. Tony Vitti, lost an eye in Palermo, lifelong White Sox fan, family man. Bob Bradley, awarded the Purple Heart when he tripped in Caldung near the German border. Mikey Smith, stayed on the beaches of Normandy. Forever 23. And underneath that is a really nice half page splash in the middle. And it's Cap, and to the left panel side of him is his allies from World War II. And on the right side, his allies from current day. So on the left, you have Nick Fury and members of the 26. And on the right, you have the Avengers and Nick Fury.
Yeah.
And it says, I have been in the company of heroes. In the company of heroes, I remain. And at the bottom of the page, there's a panel with him at the VHW?
VFW.
And at the bottom panel, he's at the VFW. And he's having a glass of milk Well, his buddies are all a little older than him, a little out of shape, you know, middle-aged.
Tony Vitti right there with his missing eye.
Yeah. And they're all holding up a beer as he toasts with a glass of milk. My mama once told me, always be proud of who you are and where you came from. Never forget the people who helped you get to where you're going. I never forget. And we cut to modern time. So that first page where we saw that guy that we thought maybe was Steve Rogers in the trench coat, in the hat, in the rain. Now we're back to that. Mm. And he's walking in to the 4FW. I always come back. And he comes in. There's a soldier there to greet him. Good evening, Captain. It's good to see you back again. It's good to be back, Sergeant. They'll be serving dinner shortly, sir. Understood. Would you give me just a moment, please? I'd like to find a particular photo. And then he goes into this hall that is looks like a museum almost, right? With the amount of photos on the wall and a glass case with some mementos and souvenirs in the middle. And he's looking at the photo, and the soldier says to him, "Does that one have special significance, sir? If you don't mind me asking." "My father, he served with the 26th in France." And then there's someone else comes and says, "Captain Rogers, if you'll go inside now, they're ready for you. We prepared the special meal exactly as you requested." And there he is, sitting with a bunch of his compatriots over the years. "I'm Captain America, and I will be here long after the others are dead and gone. But as long as I live, I will never forget. I am not a hero. First and foremost, I am a Blue Spader, one of the 26th Infantry, and proud to have called these men my comrades in arms. We were boys once. We were young and stupid. My brothers, the real heroes, lost their lives in foreign fields, not because it was their duty, but because it was right." And as I said, he cuts to, you know, current time, and he's sitting there next to only one. As the years have gone by, there's less and less for him to sit with. And this is the last one. And he has an oxygen tank as they're both sitting there having a meal at the table that used to have so many. "They were the greatest generation of Americans who ever lived. And that is why I love my country." And then Steve, to the man to his left, he moves the hair out of his eye. And the man doesn't look all there, Bob. He kind of doesn't look at Steve. He's kind of looking away. And he adjusts his medals on his chest. And then he says, "God, Dougie, I miss those boys." And that's it. The end.
Right. And they're looking, you know, they're looking at the walls, right? Because on the walls, there's murals. At least Steve is. As he's saying, "I miss those boys." On the murals, you see paintings of soldiers in action. And one of those murals are the boys coming ashore at Normandy, just as he described earlier.
Yep. All right, Bob. So thoughts on this one shot special look at Cap's origin.
Yeah. I think, you know, if somebody says, "Hey, I want to know who this guy Cap is," right? The Steve Rogers is Captain America. What is this character? I mean, hand them Mythos, Captain America, right? Because it encapsulates everything you need to know pretty much about Cap's origin and how he began and how he ended up in modern times. And there's a few things, right? There's a few tweaks along the way, right? Some stand out more than others. And we've talked about some of those in the Facebook group. We've talked about some of them in our previous shows. But overall, it's a very faithful retelling of his origin.
Yeah, it does. And why did it take 22 pages to tell something that could have been told in 3 pages, right? Because I think it fleshes out the fact that, you know, Steve's character, you know, of his humble beginnings, what he did to overcome, you know, the things. I mean, he wasn't just a, you know, a scrawny 90-pound Euro, you know, 90-pound weakling, right? He had, you know, his dad died at an early age. You know, his mom then died. You know, he came from a, you know, they were very poor. Then he was on his own and he was going through that. You know, he was bullied. He's, you know, all these different things that I think at some point all of us can relate to one aspect, right? Whether we've lost a mom or a father at an early age, whether we didn't have a lot of money, whether we were scrawny, whether we got bullied, whether we went to fantasy novels to escape reality, whatever that reality was. I think, you know, Jenkins did a nice job of like saying, look, Cap's every one of us, you know, at some point, some way, somehow, you know, there's a little bit of Steve Rogers in all of us and we can relate to that and yet be inspired by him. And so I think, you know, these stories of, I thought it was an interesting take of, he doesn't consider himself a hero. He considers, you know, his fellow comrades, the ones who didn't have the super soldier serum, you know, they were the real heroes. I really loved that part of the story.
Yeah, I do too. I mean that speaks to the goodness and the humility. One of those virtues of Captain America, right? That are on the challenge coin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, of course, this came out in, what was it, 2008, Rick?
Yes.
You know, there up until that point, there weren't that many stories that had been told about Captain America that really dwelled for a long time on his childhood or the period before he took the super soldier serum. Mm-hmm. You know, there were a few instances of mom along the way, certainly not that many that touched on his dad. And I, you know, I struggle with Rick Remender's exploration of Cap's dad in mm-hmm. Volume 7. You know, that one really bothered me.
Well, the fact he was an alcoholic and he beat his mom.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And that, you know, that he really built that, really, you know, took Grunwald's sort of cursory mention of that and really dove deep into that. But I really like the fact that Joseph in this is, you know, he smelled like applesauce and laughed a lot. I love that, right? Because I really felt like that was a great way to leave it. He lost his dad. How that was enough, right? I mean, he was probably mm-hmm. 5, 6 years old. He lost his dad. And I think that was sufficient for a formative, you know, influence on young Steve Rogers. So I like that part of this story very much. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that it showed Joseph and Sarah and young Steve so much. And we got to see different aspects of his young life because we didn't get to see that a lot prior to 2008.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to maybe I'll try to see if we can get Paul Jenkins on the show because I would love to talk to him about that. Like, why did he choose to do that? You know, this whole story was told from Steve's perspective, mm-hmm. right? And so let's be honest. Our perspective of our parents
mm-hmm.
may not be realistic, right?
True,
we
true.
May have, like, I wasn't young when my dad passed away. I think I was 23. Young enough, right?
Yeah.
Like I wasn't, it's just on that cusp of being an adult, right?
Yeah.
So I have my perspective, but then I hear these, you know, years, decades later of other people's, and it's, you know, it's maybe different from my perspective because I was a kid, right? And then he's my dad. So maybe, you know, Jenkins, because this is from Steve's perspective, of course he's going to look at his dad a certain way. Mm-hmm. Maybe Remender said, okay, but we're going to look at it from outside of Steve's perspective. And this is, you know, the kind of person that he was. I don't know. I'm curious. I would love to talk to Paul about that. And we could also talk to Paul about, because he wrote the miniseries Captain America Theater of War.
Right.
So maybe we can have him on and talk about those too. But
yeah,
this is great stuff. I gotta tell you, I can't hammer home this enough, everybody, listeners. If you don't own this, if you haven't seen this, pick it up. Go to Marvel Unlimited, you know, whatever you need to do. So beautiful. It's so beautifully rendered. And I can't wait to talk to Paolo next episode to kind of go through the details, because he worked, like, he staged things. Like, remember I told you he took all those pictures of hands?
Right.
Well, there's that one page, you know, that I have that is, gosh, I want to say it was a page. Page 7. And there's all these aides, you know, around him, strapping him in. They have, you know, getting the syringe ready. And there's all these different, you know, so he took pictures of all these different hands in different ways so that it would look realistic. You know, that scene where at the very bottom of the next page where he breaks out of the chair to go after the assassin, Paolo himself actually is, you know, there's a picture in his blog of him with his shirt off on a stool in his kitchen, leaning in the same way, taking a picture so that he could use that as a way to make this as realistic as possible. It's just beautiful artwork.
Yeah. I mean, and it goes even deeper than that. I don't know if he mentioned it on his blog, but he certainly mentioned it in some personal correspondence to me. But, you know, I only own one page from this
and
issue.
We never told the listeners which page that is, Bob.
Well, it's the second to last page. So it's when Steve returns, you know, he's at the VFW post, mm-hmm. and he first enters, and there is a young black soldier that is escorting him around. And Paolo told me that in preparation for this, he went to a VFW post in New York City. And that character was based on the guy that showed him around, that gave him a tour of the VFW post.
How about that?
Yeah. And on the third panel of that page that you described so aptly, with Steve in his army uniform sitting at a table surrounded by all these older veterans, his comrades in arms from World War II, the guy immediately sitting to the right of Cap is a vet. He's got glasses. Mm-hmm. And that, in fact, is Paolo's uncle, who was a paratrooper at Normandy on D-Day.
Oh, that's a nice tribute.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah, I would love to talk to him more about this. Can't wait for that next week. The only other thing I would say is that I found that I really liked about this story was to just show the true essence of Steve Rogers and his character, and how he's such a better person than I could ever be. At the very end, he's sitting with the man who bullied him as a child.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
Dougie.
I personally, I'm not big enough for that. Like, I mean, you know, physically and emotionally and whatever, but right. No, I mean, you know what I mean? I want to strive towards being a person like that, who is, you know, forgiving and just a high character standard like that. I love that about the story, that it came full circle like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it, and that happens in life sometimes too, right? Right, Rick. I mean, where you start off as not enemies, but certainly as opponents, but over time and in the cauldron of challenges, two people can become closer, right? Can maybe even become friends and allies. And I think maybe that's what happened. Dougie, I'm sure, never lost his rough edges, but that was okay because they shared this deep, meaningful experience and were there for each other when it mattered, and that's what matters.
All right, Bob. Well, I gotta say, this has been real fun wrapping cap with you, and looking forward to next episode when we can also do it with Paolo.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't wait for that.
All right. He's Bob Lucius. I'm Rick Verbanis, and you have been listening to another episode of the Captain America Comic Book Fans Podcast.